And during the few moments that we have left, we want to have just an off-the-cuff chat between you and me, us. We want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Several shades of gray, a submission for it. MILF lover under silk covers who kiss the horses. Pilates central to preserving the body temple. Jazz classics combating the fattest ass status. Quotient, my potion soaking like boats in oceans. Motion sickness, I overdid out my finesse pack. Multi-decking new refreshment lessons from jet snacks. My mama wisdom, my competition is setbacks. Jet lagging, Vans swagging, my Jordan's dirty. AMG performance, my foreign don't show no mercy. Mere products, objects meaningless to the overstanders. Contemplating with industrialists and social planners. Manilas. Work overseeing the five classics. You can accomplish anything if you survive blackness. Sober living, kosher kitchen and co-defendants. Soda sipping the soca rhythms and global vision. Fear no verdict, but I feel allergic to local prisons. My new resurgence, a due return into socialism. Youth moves pay dividends as an old man. Snake-headed Mayan goddess body with gold hands. Father sends, send his twins into the underworld. Though legendary, I weapon carry for same goals. My February's is necessary to save souls. Epilepsy diamonds flick a foolish on the cuff wrist. Do my duty to be useless to the fuck shit. Manufacture finished goods to service local needs. Dashboards lack the means to show my total speeds. Fast forward floors, forge orchids to go man. Construct the future with 30 bars. Long tenures, I'm returning home to dirty cars. Jasmine necklace from a poor woman, no Hindu streets. I gave her rupees, she gave me beauty, I temple creek. Manilas. They 12 o'clock in and jumping scooters. Through entertainment, I in the training to run the future. And time checked off my checkouts, too much for your computers. Chakra wave singing, bowls stirring, I'm Dalai Lama. Creation stepping, my mental selection, Bobby Condors.
Nightmare women, dream girls, and body monsters. Don't confuse my temptation battles for body mantras. Soul pilot to my reputation is body topper. Word to body jealous, our Venus in this topless opera. Lost the combination, need security to come and pop a locker. Still no drinking, just bought this champagne here to watch this vodka. Pump band merchandise, patches on leather coats. Tell you tales of illegal sales by fetid boats. Swallowed by waves to hollow graves, they'll never float. Sunken ships carry slave tokens to western coast. Manila's.
Copper alloy bracelets forms were recognized and used for currency as transactions from the end of 15th century to the mid 20th century. Their metal content varied from copper to brass. Most Manila were manufactured in England or France, and like trade beads, were used for trades with Africa. The local chiefs on the slave coast of West Africa traded their human cargo for many different commodities, and Manila was one of them. This Manila was manufactured in Birmingham between 1830 and 1850, was being shipped to Africa to be bartered for one slave each Manila. These slaves were then packed into holds of ships and taken to the West Indies and the Americas to be sold for vast profits if they did not die from the journey. The Dura was one of the slave ships with trade goods on her way to Africa to pick up her human cargo when she hit a rock and sank in 1843.
Alongside my co-host, I am Jenna Kepra, Brother Roz. Tonight we come to you from behind these enemy lines, as Brother Scotty would say.
A lot of things happen.
Hey, Brother Roz.
I just created a Wix website for my business.
My apologies.
Let me show you how I did.
I stopped it. Brother Roz, how are you tonight? This 23rd day.
Hey, I'm still
October.
Learning. Still learning, like you always say. I'm taking you, your phrase, you're taking Scotty. Let's roll with that. Yes, sir. Still learning, but it's really great to be live with you and the family. And it's great to have Scotty there, too. Peace to you, Brother Scotty, as always.
Yes, yes. Man, I just celebrated a little birth anniversary. My daughter, it's crazy. It's a lot going on. Man, today,
Happy Earth Day.
Today I would like to start off speaking of one of my children. A lot of babies are popping up missing. I'm seeing reports also, and I'm going to check these things. Go to Google, and I'm finding. They're being reported in the paper, but we don't have nowhere close to any of those Amber Alerts that other people get. So,
oh, no.
If you see
You're
some of these,
correct.
Like it's a very volatile time, and I know this is nothing new, but just I've seen like 12 people in just the last week. So it's I wanted to bring that up, share that. And look at these children, you know, these young black babies are being picking up, and a few of them are being found, but it's happening at a rapid pace. Something that happened up there close to you, Roz, they call themselves Proud Boys. I know we done mentioned them before, but these white extremists is ramping up and getting bolder by the day. So be careful who you run into. And this happened in New York, and I'm reading this off of CBS News. Three more Proud Boy members arrested for violent NYC brawl. Like, to become a member, they have to do several things, but one of the things is to fight an Antifa person. Now, I'm not sure if they're trying to single that out. It's just Antifa.
Well, they, from what I've, I was going to say, from what I heard, it was not just Antifa, but like to either assault a non-white person or attack a non-white person, and Antifa's up there. So like people who are, I guess you would say leftist versus them being, you know, people on the right, anybody on that team, which would include Antifa, but also, of course, non-white folks. From what I heard on the local news up here when the incident had taken place, because they said it took place like uptown Manhattan, I think further up than where I work, but yeah, go ahead, finish the story. I just wanted to throw that in there.
You didn't make me miss nothing. That's exactly what I was meaning. It's not just Antifa. I brought that up because that's what they're stating. But
somebody said that woman who.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to interject something real quick because somebody brought up. That the woman who has said the 9-year-old boy had touched her no behind in Brooklyn, they said that she actually, somebody put it out there. They said, I wonder if she was trying to be recruited because they picked out how she was dressed that day. And it was very similar to those Proud Boys dress. And I mean, we don't know, that's speculation, but from what I understand, that's basically how they recruit folks, is basically you start stuff with non-white folks, or you, especially the abuse, the physical assaults on either leftists or non-white folks, is like an initiatic. Like you could call it a gang initiation, because that's all it is a gang with right. Political leanings.
Right. Yeah. But I'm not even sure, because it seems like they're also misogynistic. Only males can join. So, I mean, it's a lot, and I just keep an eye on the way these people that you encounter on a day-to-day basis, how they dress, you know what I'm saying, mannerisms, because you could be running across one of those people. Mm-hmm. So just keep your eyes.
That's why I stay on alert. Yep, yes, I stay on alert when I'm open. In the city, wherever I am, period, but especially in the city.
So I wanted to also go to this, speaking of Antifa, this comes out of CNN. Now, this mm-hmm. is an old one, but I think it speaks to exactly what we're talking about. Now, this came out on July the 12th, 2018, but CNN in the headline reads, a new bill aims to send mass Antifa activists to jail for 15 years. Now, I see how things are lining up. Now, these people are going out there looking for people, and sometimes in groups. Did you say something, Brother Ross?
Oh, no. Nah, I actually had myself muted. Okay. I was actually talking, but I was muted. No, I'm good. You can go ahead.
I heard something. Okay. But never mind. So now they can't wear their mask or what have you. And remember, these people have a history of researching folks and going to find where they at, whether they go there or some of their members in that particular state. Not too long ago, we was reporting about these white supremacist groups gathering up on things like Fortnite, you know, and using that as a resource to gain more people. So just keep all of this in mind, because they have no problem snatching us up off the street. And that's not just children. Those are adult men and women also included. So just be mindful of your surroundings. And that was it. That was all I wanted to get into. Some of the other stuff we'll get into later, Roz. But okay. What's up with this show, man? Because I was, when you came up with this, I was wild. So you want to get into this in the name also, why you worded it the way you worded it. Can you explain that for us?
Sure.
Please?
Sure. A vector is any living thing that is known to carry a particular illness or disease. And normally the disease or illness it carries is communicable. So a vector of disease would be like rats. Rats are known to carry, one of the famous ones is hantavirus. And it's you can get it by being around their droppings, or if you touch somewhere where they've rubbed up against the wall or along a certain area, you can pick it up in certain parts of the world. And it's one of the world's deadliest viruses. So that's an example. Now, the reason why I say vectors of infection, Baba Kaba Hiawatha Kamen, I was talking to him on the phone last week, and it was, we were having a discussion because I was watching a discussion he had with Philip Matthews on YouTube, and he had used a phrase, and I just told him, I said, I thought it was just quite accurate and brilliant when he said it in the context in which he said it in the discussion. So what he said was, black people are not sick. We have been infected by sick people. So how he broke it down was essentially, you know, we've been in this situation with them being dominant and us assimilating to their culture and attempting to actively assimilate to their culture, thinking that it would cause a change in how we would be treated. So essentially, we've caught the infection they have, not just us black people, but everyone around the world, because they've dominated the whole planet. So racism, white supremacy is the disease that I'm referencing, and I call them vectors because they're the origin of this whole concept. No one was in any race until white people invented the concept of a race. And they not only invented the concept of a race, but they turned our existence into a race where everybody's crippled and hobbled. And the worst crippled and hobbled people are the black people. And white people are the only ones that are left in good health to completely run the race and run rings around everybody else who they've crippled in some form or fashion, so they can't run the race in a competitive fashion. And just to use a visual. So ultimately, vectors of infection just means that they carry the illness. We are trapped in the illness now because our entire society, the hierarchy of our society, is all white supremacy. There's not an area of people activity. That's economics, education, entertainment, healthcare, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war. There's not one of those areas of people activity that black people control for themselves. They are all controlled by the colonizer. And the same control that they wield over us today is what they wielded over us 500 years ago. The difference is it was more overt. And because our oldest enslaved ancestors that came to these shores had memories of the way things used to be, they just went through pure hell just trying to get their black self-respect back by any means necessary. In some cases, you know, having to actually give it up in order to survive. So these are all things that, to me, if you look at, you know, 500 years ago versus now, to me, there's not much difference except for the refinement of what was done back then. It's so refined that you don't need the physical change. We actually act in line with the system because we understand that we're infected, and that's myself included. And that's why I always say for us to function in this society and not lose our sanity every single day of the year and just be overtly violent just on a constant, we have to have somehow created sanity within this insanity for us to function as like we are now, having a civil conversation about something like this and not really losing it. Because if you look at the ways, even the way it's depicted, if you look at Goodbye Uncle Tom or, you know, Roots in the Beginning, those ancestors knew it was insanity. That's why some of them fought so hard to get away. Some of them committed mass suicide, you know, and others just started fighting to the death to stop them because they understood that. Now we've been in it so long, we have to now find our way out of it. So vectors of infection, that's pretty much the long and short of it. Hopefully I wasn't too long-winded.
No. I just thought it was interesting the way that it was worded, and just to give the people who went and seen it, just so they could get your understanding of why it was worded that way and what the show was going to be about. But go ahead. I know we had a couple of articles before we get into this.
Yeah, a couple of health articles, and one just has to do with just a historical figure I wanted to give some, pay some homage to. But the first one is from Wake Up World and wakeupworld.com. And this one, it says how raw honey could save your microbiome and travel back in time. So I'm just going to read a brief section of it, not the whole thing. It says, did you know that there are billions of years of biological information encoded within your cells? and that depending on what you do or do not eat, the information is activated or remains latent. It is a biological fact that the distant past is embedded within the present. No one could have described this more aptly and tangibly than Teach Nhat Hanh when he said, quote, "If you look deeply into the palm of your hand, you will see your parents and all generations of your ancestors. All of them are alive in this moment. Each is present in your body. You are the continuation of each of these people," unquote. In fact, each cell in your body, along with all of the cells in all living creatures on the planet today, derived from a last universal common ancestor known as LUCA, L-U-C-A, estimated to have lived some 3.5 to 3.8 billion years ago in the primordial ocean. While this may strike the reader as a visual concept, even Charles Darwin acknowledged this phenomenon in The Origin of Species. So they're basically talking about the microbiome in the human gut, and that honey facilitates the growth and development of the microbiome that we need to remain healthy. Last week, I talked about the fact that the body is found to, it's found to have had an additional brain and this and an entire nervous system that's strictly dedicated to the gut, and that the brain has a direct link on the nervous system line in that nervous system where that second brain lies to the gut. And that a lot of mental health illnesses, ADHD, autism, Alzheimer's, dementia, and a whole host of other ones are directly linked to imbalanced or just horrific gut bacteria issues or pathogenic gut bacteria that facilitates the deterioration of your cognitive skills in your mind when they're out of balance. So this is talking about honey's ability to bring that back into homeostasis or into balance. So that's one I wanted to put out there. I think it's exceptionally important that we take care of that system, especially having two in-laws that are suffering from, well, one is deceased now, rest his ba and his ka, but I have a mother-in-law still here with us that is suffering from dementia. So that's why I thought it was quite important. I don't know how many other people that are listening potentially might be dealing with a family member in the same situation. The next one is also from Wake Up World. Excuse me. This one is the 12 amazing health benefits of holy basil. So holy basil is, you can get it in essential oil form, but it's also an herb that you can use in cooking and in salads and things like that. So I'm not going to go deep. I'm just going to read what it's known, some of the things it's known to do. So it's known to reduce anxiety and stress, balance your blood sugar. It helps your heart health. It freshens your breath. Yes, it does. Improves sleep. Soothes headaches, it relieves earaches, protects the stomach, it reduces body fever, improves skin health, boosts brain function. I've used that for my mother-in-law, promotes eye health as well. So they give the different ways you can utilize it as a tea, in supplement tablets, or as an essential oil or an extract. They tell you the ways you can use it and any potential side effects if you overdo it with that particular herb. So it's a very comprehensive article on holy basil. It's an herb you should be very familiar with. And they call it holy because it also repels insects. It repels like mosquitoes and stuff like that too. Let me go back here and go to the, I think it's one more, from Natural Blaze. I believe it is.
Natural Blaze.
Say it again.
Ginseng. That's what you're looking for.
Oh, you got it. You want to touch on one, and I think the last one is just the person I want to highlight after that, and then we could get into the rest of the show.
Yeah, it's just, yeah. I was just letting you know where you was at. You go ahead.
Oh, okay, cool. Let me open it up. I thought you had it open already. That's why I was asking. Because my page isn't, you know how to give you the little blurb you can read? It's not pulling it up on my computer tonight for what I don't know. So this one is from naturalblaze.com, and it's basically the benefits of ginseng. I'm just going to read some of the things that it's known to be good for. I've taken this for years. It's really a potent herb. So it improves your mood and reduces stress. It improves brain function, and it's known to help with ADHD and also Alzheimer's as well. They talk about that. Lowers inflammation. Again, inflammation is one of the main causes of disease and illness in the body is inflammation. The other is mucus, I would say. Those are the two at the top of the list. So it lowers inflammation. It helps with weight loss. It increases energy, which it does. It may prevent and treat cancer, and it goes into that. It treats erectile dysfunction, lowers blood sugar, boosts the immune system. It treats menopausal symptoms as well. So it's also pretty comprehensive. It tells you how much you should have. It gives you side effects if you overdo it. So it's a pretty comprehensive article. I think it's, again, one of those things you should have in your house and make good use of, because it can help you with a myriad of different things, as the article went into. The last one is from face2faceafrica.com. And I just wanted to highlight this sister because she seems to be lost in the annals of history. And I just actually found out about her myself, but I thought she was quite fascinating. And her story is so incredible. It almost seems unbelievable, but she was a real person, and she was actually known as the Queen of Jamaica. Here it is. So this one is entitled Akua, the influential slave leader who became queen in Jamaica but was executed by the British. So I'm going to just read like the first two paragraphs. So it says, the Queen of Kingston in Jamaica, or Cuba Cornwallis, as she's popularly known, is lost in history due to improper documentation that makes it hard to follow or believe in her existence. In trying to read about the adventurous life of this woman who took the unwilling journey into slavery from Africa and was later executed for resisting oppression, it's easy to think that one is reading about two different women while trying to make sense of her story. That withstanding, it is equally important to attempt to make sense of her story and tell it as it is, an important part of history. Cuba Cornwallis' real name was Akua, from the Ashanti Empire in Ghana, which was then the Gold Coast. Nothing much is said about her life before being captured and sold off as an enslaved girl to the Caribbean. But through historical readings, it can be speculated that she was captured during the early years of the many Ashanti Empire wars in an attempt to expand their empire and have more power than the British. It is very possible that Akua was captured during the same time King Takye was captured, or perhaps a little earlier than he was. So this goes into her story, how she made it to Jamaica, how she became so revered on the island of Jamaica. She became known as the Queen of Kingston and the Queen of Jamaica, and then eventually she was killed by the British for being an abolitionist, basically. So I just wanted to give her some highlight and a shout-out. It's a really great article on her. They go into her spiritual practices. So she was into practicing Obia, which is basically African traditional religion, usually from the Congo area. And then you also had the Oromanti tribe that also was involved in Obia. And it can be used for good or bad. And there's a lot of different herbal medicinal knowledge that goes along with Obia. So it's not just about working some sort of negative magic on people. It's actually that your knowledge of herbs has to be top notch when you're dealing with Obia. It's a very intricate spiritual system once you get into it. But they talk about that with her too. So I just wanted to give her a shout out, Akua, Queen of Jamaica.
That's what's
give her
up.
A shout out since she's little known to history. Again, she was an abolitionist too. So I think her name needs to ring. So yeah, with that,
yeah.
I would say we can go to that second video that says start at minute 2 and end at minute 15.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you perfectly.
Okay, I thought I was muted. Before we get into that, we're going to get right into it. But I wanted to, I got this other article that I wanted to address real quick. And that was a dope article too, because I had never heard of her. So that was, that's something cool.
Yeah,
I had to show
either.
The children. But this comes from the Gyro, and we had reported on this a couple of months back, and this is about the Monsanto's case, $289 million to the man that had all the lesions. You remember that story?
Yes, I think his name was Dwayne Johnson or Dwayne Jackson, something like that. Yes,
Dwayne Johnson.
I felt really bad for him.
That's right. Well, today. Yeah. Today, he went back to court. Mind you, this man is terminally ill, dying. He's dying. Judge/ is Monsanto.
In fact, they tried to settle the case.
They did settle the case.
Hoping he would die.
They have went
back. No, I said they tried to settle the case hoping he would die. And
no,
then the court
Listen for a second. Mm-hmm. Judge slashes Monsanto's $289 million award for black man with lesions on 80% of his body to $39 million. So that's what I wanted to get into this, because you're exactly right. But that's the headline. That's how it starts. Now, what has happened?
Wow,
is
you
that,
just blew my mind, because on the news this morning, they said it was dropped to 78 million. So that means it dropped even more now to 39. Wow.
And exactly for what you said, I believe they're trying to keep this in court to so he can die. But this it goes to say Superior Court Judge. Hold on, my computer acting up. Superior Court Judge Suzanne Babalos sided with Monsanto's, the maker of Weed Killer Roundup, after they requested to overturn the multimillion-dollar verdict and reduce the damages awarded to the terminally ill black man, Dwayne Johnson. Barbello said the plaintiff represented no clear and convincing evidence of malice or oppression to support an award of punitive damages, CNN reports. Johnson is a groundskeeper who reportedly used the Weed Killer Roundup regularly while spraying it on the grounds he worked on in San Francisco Bay Area School District. Monsanto's company is the manufacturer of Roundup. Now, we had done discussed all of this. I wanted to bring that up because, for one, they're stealing this man's money and it looks like it's working because, like you stated, it's continuously going down. But I also remember this is the same people that merged with Bayer, the aspirin that a lot of people take. So,
yeah,
still killing people. I just wanted to point that out before we got into the show. But what were you going to say about that, Roz?
I'm glad you brought that up, because I remember this morning they said that it went from like 289 to just 78, and then you just read 39, which needed to drop more between this morning and now. Which is just, you know, this system is just incredible. And I think really what they're trying to do is reduce the amount of damages they have to pay out, because if they pay out $289 million to him and then say they have another couple hundred lawsuits at that kind of money, they're going to be bankrupt. And the other part
which
of it,
they
too,
should.
Is the thing is, he had complained about having health problems because he was using it for 10 years. So that all of that damage happened in a 10-year span. And so there is malice there. And there is suffering there. He didn't get to this condition he's in like a year or something. It was a cumulative thing, and he started having health issues. He just didn't attribute it to Roundup for quite an extensive time period that he was actually using it. So, yeah, I mean, our lives aren't worth anything. That's pretty much what it is. I mean, it's horrible. Because his family, you know, they have to deal with the fact that not only is he going to pass away, but the cumulative familial and monetary value he would add to his family is going to vaporize. And they're just trying to wait him out, let him die and bury everything. And, you know, it's just, man, this system is just, man.
Hey,
I have no words for it.
I got one more, PG.
Go ahead.
And then we're going to get right into the show. Now, this comes from this is, and I believe it's going on down in South Carolina, along with everywhere. Just here recently in Georgia, they had where they put all of the elderly men and women off of the bus trying to go sign up for voting. I always say that local voting is the most important. That's where you get your representation. So when things are happening, if you are not a part of picking your representation, regardless if you vote for the president or not, your local representation is going to be the most affected area in your politics. Be a part of that. Now, I know we don't live in a republic where we can vote them out as soon as they start jacking up. But you have to have somebody to be held accountable. And if you don't vote for your local election, you have to blame yourself. Go vote early. That's just my take. I know everybody don't feel the same. I just want to get that out.
I agree.
And
your local politics affects their daily reality. So for you not to vote locally is, you know, you're just contributing to your own suffering. Or you're contributing to change, if depending on how you vote and if you vote. Now, the presidency is a joke, so that I've said that for years. I don't mess with the presidency because we don't vote the president in. It's the Electoral College that does so. So So I don't worry about that. But when it comes to the local, you better get in on that early. Like you said, study those competitors, find out who is presenting issues and attempting to deal with issues that you know are important to your local community and the different things that are happening where you are locally. Vote for those people. If they have town halls where you can question them and bring up the things that you find important, put them on the table so that they become an issue. Those are the types of things you want to do and be involved. Study the history of the area you're in. Study the demographics. Study the voting history of the area that you're in. All of those little things. It sounds like a lot, but it's worth it just to make sure that you're able to facilitate the change that you want.
Perfect
because
example.
Like you just said, if you don't vote, you know, hey, you said it before. You can't boo shit if you don't do shit.
Hey, listen,
that's
perfect,
a great way
perfect
of putting
example,
it right
Roz. Where I'm from, they trying to put in a sewage plant on the river. Perfect reason
okay.
to
oh,
go
man,
in and go
horrible.
Vote. Destroy our water. We got beautiful lakes and rivers. Trying to destroy it.
And
perfect
you don't want
reason to go vote for this midterm. And everything else that involves your local economy, economics, everything. So, but if you have a question or comment, as soon as we get out of this video we're finna get into, by all means, give us a call. That number is 704-802-5056. Press star to put yourself in the queue, and we'll be with you as soon as possible. You are listening to Real Life Radio. Brother Roz, which one did you want me to hit first?
It's the second one that says minute 2 to 15.
Gotcha.
Okay. So just start it at minute 2 and then let it run to 15.
Go. Oh, okay, I know exactly what this is.
Well, we always have to set the precedent with the show for those who are under rocks and have not seen previous shows that you and I have done. If this is the first time you're being introduced to Dr. Jacqueline Battalora, what makes Dr. Battalora such a force of nature in this fight against racism, bigotry, white supremacy, and superiority is that she basically went back. It was by accident, in a sense, that you found these laws, and there were people who preceded you, like, you know, Theodore Allen and many others who have wrote about this, but you are the person of today, if you will, that is really helping us understand white people were created for a purpose in America, that there is no historical reference of any European in history referring to themselves as white or people as white. So this was a construct that was created only in America. And for a specific reason. Let's walk through that real quick, and then we can get into our actual conversation.
Absolutely. The parts that are so important to remember are that to lay the groundwork, prior to the moment in time when this category called white people was invented, people of African descent and people of European descent in the colonies had the exact same rights as a matter of law. So that what did that mean? It meant that a free man of African descent could vote, and they did. They could own indentured servants or slaves, and they did. And so because we are so unfamiliar with a society that looks like that, mm-hmm. that sort of part of the picture is the one that people have the hardest time grasping.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if you look to the work of historian Edmund Morgan, who especially looks at the Virginia colony, his research, you'll see that he provides lots of evidence to show to support the claim that persons of African descent and persons of European descent were treated the same as a matter of law. They lived the same life on the plantations, ate together, slept together. There was no hierarchy. that was based upon someone being from Africa or somebody being from Europe. None at all. So that's a key part always to hold on to. So why then was this category white people invented? It was invented because there was a huge rebellion and it threatened the 1%. And so they responded to that threat and they wrote in communications to the legal oversight authority in London that they're going to ensure Bacon's rebellion never happens again. And how are they going to do it? They're going to deploy a divide and conquer strategy so that the united labor force that rose up against them could never happen again. And that's where Theodore Allen's work is really important. He dug into those letters and he captured their, their expressed intent to divide the laborers.
Wow.
So it is after that communication and after the rebellion that we see the first use in law of a reference to a group of humanity called white people. And it happens in 1681 in colonial Maryland. And what we know is there's a whole bundle of laws that get passed. And what they did was they reorganized colonial society and they created an entirely new bottom to the society and tossed people of African descent and members of native tribes to the bottom and gave this new invented group of people called white people benefits that allowed them to rule over persons of African descent and members of native tribes. And so that's the shorthand story of the invention of white people.
And the longhand story, of course, is that's what ushered in chattel slavery, and that's what ushered in all of the what we are living with today, and why you and I are having these conversations, trying to put some context into, well, why do white people hate black people, and why do black people hate white people, and where is all of this coming from? We now know that there was a genesis; it wasn't just something that socially started per se. Obviously, there were attitudes and some levels of consciousness of them versus us in terms of color prior to that in order for them to say, well, you know what, we're going to now make it really a law. Because I think I remember you saying that they were kind of trying to massage this earlier, like in 1640.
Right.
But it really didn't stick. They actually had a law where people of African descent could not vote, but couldn't own gunpowder or something to that effect. But they didn't really, it wasn't, you know, it was like, you know, just kind of driving past a stoplight. It wasn't something that was going to, you know.
Unenforced. It just was unenforced. A dead law.
Yeah, a dead law. So, you know, this is powerful because we're here in this new administration in the White House. And there was, you remember that movement, Occupy Wall Street?
Absolutely.
Well, Occupy Ross, I remember having some experts on to talk about the Occupy movement, and it was the first time I had even heard the term the 1%.
Yes.
Obviously, I had no historical reference to it in terms of what we're talking about right now.
I actually use that language from Occupy Wall Street. It's not from my era. It's today's version.
Absolutely. Well, you know, what's powerful about this continued ongoing conversation, Doc, is white people, quote unquote, that are walking around right now, and the children to be born are born into a duped system and a duped identity.
Yeah.
White people are in and living an identity crisis based upon what was set into law 1681, that as a result they have these special privileges and this special attitude. And you were telling me in the green room that when you were doing the speaking engagement in the audience, a lot of people were constantly saying, you know, well, when slaves was this and slaves were that, and there was a Jamaican woman that stood up and said, no, there were people who were enslaved. Because when you start using and internalizing the language of slaves as if these are no longer people, taking away their humanity, that's how easy and slippery that slope is to begin them versus us. We're superior, you're not. And this is where we are now with a lot of the language and attitude that we see in this new administration.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was really a powerful moment. I was letting you know I've had a bunch of feedback today from people who are at the talk, and most of them made reference to how powerful that was for them. Because it's so common, right? It's just common to use the terminology slave, but what are we doing, right, when we just participate without seeing what we're doing? And it made me think of other really common terminology, like I'm just an American and you're an African American. Mm-hmm. And I always loved when Whoopi Goldberg was like, I'm an American, and she took a lot of heat from the African American community. Mm-hmm. But she was, I think, really contesting that,
because there is a difference between an American and an African American.
It applies white.
Exactly.
It was created from its founding via naturalization law. But to resist it in her language and her claim for herself, I loved that. I loved that.
Very powerful and very enlightened woman. Very, very enlightened woman. I would not be surprised if she hasn't read your books and all and know of that level of history, which is interesting to bring up. Previous President Barack Obama had a Juris Doctorate in international law.
Right.
He had to know. Mm-hmm. He had to know. Wouldn't you? I mean, you're a lawyer. But that wasn't your specialty.
You
kind of accidentally found out about it as you were looking back. You went home and something was bothering you, nagging you. You can tell that story. But what do you think is? Do the presidents know this?
No.
Well, I guess this one does, because he thinks Frederick Douglass is still alive.
Yeah, no. And I don't think Barack Obama knew it, because here's the thing. Law school is a Juris Doctorate, and nobody really specializes. What it usually means is you got to take a couple of upper level law classes in a particular area, for example, international law. But you don't specialize in law school. It's just a law degree. So
interesting.
So to me, that suggests that he didn't know this. Very few people know this, Philippe. Your listenership are probably among the 1% in that regard. Truly. I know that may sound shocking to people. And I also think we kind of like this conspiracy theory. That, they really know and they're hiding it. I think it simply doesn't hold up.
Really? Interesting. That's very powerful, because considering, what those laws meant and what they mean even today and the historical relevance of that. You think there's a lot of legislators and politicians in high office that don't know about
the invention of white people? They don't know.
Really?
Absolutely.
Well, we need to go and start a whole... We need to protest, get some flags and stuff.
That's why I'm here with you so regularly. Like, we... Look, here's...
Because we've never... Now, you and I have never had this conversation.
Yeah, before. No. But,
and I'm shocked. I'm going to be, I'm interested to hear from you guys out there, your thoughts, because I'm saying, they got to know.
Let me ask your listeners this here. And in this new book that I keep saying I'm writing, and I really am.
eventually it will be.
So there was this young man who was, I believe he was a first year student at Princeton. And a couple of years ago, he wrote this op-ed in the Princeton paper saying he was really angry about hearing check your privilege. He kept hearing that and hearing it and hearing it. Mm-hmm. And he was like, I don't have any privilege and I don't know what you're talking about. And my family was Jewish and half of them were slaughtered. And my grandparents were lucky enough to be allowed into this amazing nation where they could work hard and succeed. You know the story. Okay. So, and he was picked up by Fox News and all the really conservative commentarians loved him. And so when a Google journalist called me and asked for my thoughts on it, it really drove home this point. Our K-12 education does not give us the information that we need to understand this history that I've been just trying to get out there. Right? Because here he is at an elite Ivy League school, and he has no clue that the only reason his parents could become naturalized citizens in the 1940s was because they were white. Right?
No other reason.
No. And why would he? Did you learn it in school? I didn't learn it. No. Nobody, you know, and I didn't learn it in graduate school, and I didn't learn it in law school. And
but that's where I think, Doc, the conspiracy theory comes from. Who's hiding this information? Why is it hidden? Why is this history hidden?
Well, you have to, I mean, here's what's so important for us to understand is that we are all, including us in this moment, we are so limited in how we can make sense of things by our conceptual frameworks. Mm-hmm. And my ability to identify when I was looking through those laws and white people weren't there then and they were there at this moment, I bet thousands, hundreds of thousands of people may have seen that. But nobody said, wait a minute, maybe white people were invented, right?
Okay, and we will stop it right there. Brother Roz, that is so very interesting. I'm going to let you open up with mm-hmm. that.
Yes. First, when I heard her discuss this, one major thing that I used to always think and say was that white supremacy, the concept of it, started with women because they're the first teacher of the children. Dr. Welsom used to say that and quite a few others. Now, this sets the precedent that it was powerful within the 1% white men who came up with this concept in order to stop basically mistreated and abused, enslaved and indentured Europeans and enslaved and indentured Africans from uniting to fight against the 1% abuse and mistreatment of them. That is in 1681 was when the use of the term white people was written into law, and all of a sudden we had these white people. So she's basically breaking that down. So I want to make that self-correction on the air right now. So it's white, rich white men, powerful white men who invented white supremacy and codified it within the law, and white women are their progenitors. They spread it because they are the first teachers of the children. So that's how I see it now, because she just set that record completely straight using their own records and their own history. Also, one thing that she
hold
said
on,
too,
hold on, Brother Scotty mm-hmm. had a question. He said,
"Oh, sure, absolutely."
He said, "Are you saying Anglo-Saxon British?" Well, go ahead, Brother Scotty. Your mic open.
Well, I'll just address that part first, but I had a question because I missed some of what they were saying about Whoopi Goldberg, and I caught everything after that.
Okay.
And I have some thoughts on that, but I want to get clarification
okay.
on sure. what they were talking about, like what's the ramifications of someone calling themselves African-American. But what I was saying in the chat was specific.
Yes,
remember, white men didn't exist at that time. They were
right.
They were Anglo-Saxon, a.k.a.
Yes.
British.
You are correct. Right. Yep. Thank you. Thank you for that, because that's an important thing to note. Because I've always explained to people, when you study the history of European white people, you will find that all of them have their origins in Germany. And there were three tribes. I call them the unholy three, the unholy trinity: the Angles, the Saxons, and the Jutes. And from those three Germanic tribes, all of the other ones came, the British, the Scottish, the Irish, all of them came from those three, if you trace their roots back. And that's why I always say, because of America, the Nazis did win the war. Because British people who settled this country were nothing but descendants of the original Nazis anyway. And you are absolutely correct. It was a British Anglo-Saxons who actually created this, like you said, created whiteness, codified it, and now it has, again, vectors of infection. Now they're called white globally. When she made it quite explicit that it is an invention and creation of America, that is why I always say America's most valuable export has been white supremacy and anti-blackness. That is what has made this country rich.
Well,
Go ahead, brother.
I have to correct myself as well. I actually had posted a video. I don't know if this is the same woman or not, but I posted a video on Black Talk Radio Network of her lecture covering this same material. I'm not sure it's the same white woman.
It is. It is. I remember because I saw it, Brother Scotty. Yes, Jacqueline Battalore. And actually, Gus had interviewed her twice on the Cow and had a very productive conversation.
I have to correct myself because, you know, of the debates of where did the term black come from? When did black people start calling themselves black and this?
Right.
And so, you know, I had read some history where this this African descendant preacher was given a sermon. He was given a speech, but he was given a sermon and he referred to himself as black. And then, you know, I knew about the 60s, you know, they were calling us Negroes and what have you. That was the legal designation on paperwork was Negro or something like that. But then even searching my own family census record from my maternal line, I found in the census that one family in our line, the woman was listed in the census report as black. And her husband was listed as mulatto, and all the children were listed as mulatto. So I was like, well, that's counter to the information about the one drop rule, that if you had one drop of black, then you were designated as black. But
right.
They designate those children as black. They gave them the father's designation, which was mulatto, meaning half white and half black. And so then coming on up to the 60s, we know the Black Power movement. And that's when, you know, James Brown came out with I'm Black and I'm Proud after the Black Panther Party approached him about the type of music he was making. But after viewing that lecture and then recalling some of those old colonial laws, they did put black there. If I'm going to go by and trace it to the beginnings, they also created the term black. They created the term black. So I, you know, that was enlightening to me because I was under the assumption that that's something we chose for ourselves.
Yes, because I know some of the earliest distinctions of ourselves as black people was in the Nile Valley, and that's when we first started to counter white people in the Middle East. And when you look at what they call the first intermediate period, which is when the Hyksos had actually taken over what is now considered northern Egypt in the Delta region, they basically gentrified that whole area and mistreated the black population. And the vast majority of them either went south or west, and then the rest actually happened to just
I'm aware of that as well, but I'm specific.
But I know your context of what you're talking about is here, specifically system. Here.
Yeah, I'm talking about this system. But I am aware that other people, you know, before this system was created, although they may not have used the English word black, you know, they did, you know, refer to themselves as such, you know, a few tribes and or nations in Africa. Now,
yeah, you're correct.
The question that I want to ask is what did she say about African Americans? What was the whole thing about Whoopi Goldberg?
Whoopi Goldberg.
Oh, go ahead, Dennis.
Whoopi Goldberg was saying that she was an American and not an African American. And what she was making, the point that she was making is that there's a distinction between African American because of the color being black, and that American was white. That's when you say you're American, you're saying that you're white. That's what she was saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, her exact words was American implies white automatically.
So Whoopi was only calling herself an American.
Right.
Yes.
On The View, on her TV show.
Here's the thing, though. Other non-black people do it, too. Non-African people. They call themselves Irish Americans. They call themselves Japanese.
Italian Americans.
They Chinese Americans, German Americans. And, you know, that I don't see anything wrong with that. Outside of the law, outside of legal cultural arguments, but, you know, that's just simply maintaining the connection to your cultural heritage or your nationality before you became an American. Even though African isn't a nationality, it's a continental designation. Now,
because we don't know, a lot of us don't know where on the continent our ancestors came from. Absolutely.
Right. Exactly. So, you know, I would just wanted to point out that black people aren't the only ones who refer to themselves as African Americans. And I don't know how true it is, but I read or heard that Jesse Jackson came up with the term African American. And I can understand why he did. Now, the last thing I want to share with is in terms of codification. Mm-hmm. I actually was talking to Max earlier today, and, you know, I've had this position that the abolitionist movement doesn't need to be racialized. It doesn't need to be colorized, okay? Mm-hmm. We don't want to end slavery, nor would it be possible. How can you end slavery just for one group of people? You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
How is that going to look? What kind of legislation is that going to do? You know, for example, in Colorado with Amendment A, they're going to vote in November to remove the slavery exception clause as punishment for crime from their constitution. Now, obviously, they can't put in that Amendment A wording saying we want to end legalized slavery for African Americans only. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that doesn't make sense. And also,
why do we have to attach a color to it? Why do we have to racialize it? You know, that's going back to what Mr. Fuller said. You know, can you describe mistreatment without using the word racism? Because as soon as you allege racism, mm-hmm.
you have to prove it.
Automatically get people going
to
be against you just because.
We're going to learn about that tonight, too. Yep.
So, what I've been trying to train myself to do, train my mind that when I write or when I speak on these issues, I don't say nothing. Like, for example, God bless Colin Kaepernick. His heart is in the right place. He probably never heard of Mr. Fuller, probably never listened to any of the things he said about that. Mm-hmm. And he's concerned, you know, he's showing a sincere concern for black people being shot down by cops. But if he was codified, he would simply say, Americans are being killed. And that's how I try to train myself mm-hmm. to speak about it in these terms. It shouldn't matter who's being killed. What should be, like Mr. Fuller said, nobody should care who's in charge as long as no one's being mistreated and everybody who needs help gets help. So in a tactical type of way, because I know, quote unquote, white people have more political power than black people. And if we want to solve the problem of police brutality, then I can't get them to think black when they hear the word police brutality. I'm using American. Americans are being shot down by cops. Americans are being killed by police more than any other group of people of any other nation in the world. So I'm just following on Mr. Fuller's logic on that, because then I take away the ability for a white person, a suspected racist, to argue with me and then say, well, black people commit more crimes than they always doing that.
Right.
And no, dog, I ain't say nothing about black people. I said Americans, okay?
And you know so that what that does?
That includes the white people who get killed. That includes the Asian people who get killed, the Latino people who get killed. So, you know, that's all I wanted to share, that in certain circumstances, I see where codification will help us.
Hey,
I think
man.
that is brilliant, because that's really a Maashan approach. It's basically taking us back to pre-1681, when everybody was treated the same and society viewed each other the same, and legally everyone was written as equal in the books and treated as such. So basically using that term, or taking back the term American, because, you know, we know when you go back to the oldest dictionary, the Noah's Webster dictionary, 1828, that they say that American was a term applied to the original copper-colored people found here in North America and was then only going to be applied to Europeans and their descendants. So that's when they stole the term American and basically created it around this concept of whiteness, which was 200 years plus after the original creation of whiteness in 1681. So ultimately, Scotty, that form of codification is us taking back the term American. And like you said, everybody's an American. So instead of just saying, oh, Puerto Rican American got shot by a cop and a black American got shot or an African American got shot, an American got shot. And when they put the person's photo up or something, then you know, okay, well, this person is from the African American community. But we refer to them as an American. That's what it says on their passport. It doesn't say African American United States, Puerto Rican American United States. It just says United States of America. So, yeah, I think that's brilliant. Go ahead, Jennifer.
Yeah, I mean, Scotty was hitting on a bunch of points of something that I was going to get to, just the codification, because it was an issue. And I tell people that I meet when they having these issues, not even to bring up racism. Because of that codification, because once you do that, the onus is on you to prove them to be racist. And a lot of times, whatever mistreatment they was doing to you gets lost because now you have to prove that it was racist. So you end up being the victim all over again. And just that codification that Brother Scotty was talking about is vital, very vital. And,
I had a few more things
I wanted to speak to that too. And OG, if you want to get in here, you know. Oh, by the way, we have passed our break, so real quick, you are listening to the radio show. If you have a question or comment, by all means, give us a call. That number is 704-802-5056. Press star to put yourself in the queue and we'll be right with you. Now, she said a whole bunch of things in that particular snippet, and some of those things I wanted to address. One of the things being that these people don't know, and I know a lot of people would
I was going to say that, too. I'm glad you brought that up. Go ahead.
A lot of people would disagree with that, but especially down here where I'm from, where some of them are overt, some of them are covert, but it's a lot of them that do not know any of this history. And what they do is they just so settled in, the same way that we're settled in, they just get used to mistreating us, don't know what for or how to get away with it. They just accept it and practice. When you start discussing these things, though, I'm not saying that they change, but you do get a different response from them from that point on. Because you know, and once you know, and somehow some of this information leaks out, then they know that they can't say certain things to you, treat you in a certain manner, because you know how it works, and you can see it coming beforehand to kind of change that situation. So all of these things are vital. Do not give them more credit or power than they deserve. Because when we just assume
remember, it took me a while to really grasp that, because you said that long before I saw the video. And we had to agree to disagree back then.
yeah.
Go ahead.
But when you give them the, when you allow yourself to assume that they do know, then you're giving up on yourself halfway already, because you have already put yourself in a subservient manner. And what happens?
You know what's funny about that, though? The system is so diabolical, it's hard not to think that they're purposely doing it. Oh, my bad. Go ahead.
Now, what I was saying is when you put yourself in a subservient manner, then you begin to receive. So that was one of the things that I wanted to discuss. Another point is that the fact that some of us can't get over the fact when we figure out that they don't know, the same way Mr. Phillips was. No, it can't be. You know, some of us don't let that go and refuse to acknowledge that and continue to be in that same subservient posture. What you think about that, Ross?
Oh, yeah. I think really some of us have been, and like I said, there's some of our people who have been conditioned to worship their oppression. And it's just like a religion. If you find out something about your religion that is uncomfortable or disconcerting, it can be like life shattering. I remember Dr. Ben talking about that a lot. Like, you know, you might learn certain things about your religion, just its origins or the fact that it doesn't have the history that you may be told, you know, in your religious institution or on whatever holy day you go. And then you start to actually research the history of the religion, the origins of the religion. And then you start to find out that a lot of what you're being taught is not really the truth. It can be life shattering. So I think for some people, it's just easy to continue to fall in line. It reminds me of the discussion I had with this sister on the way home from work today. And I said to her, I said, a lot of our people have no concept of the fact that there was a time when white people didn't run things. A lot of us think this is just the way things have always been. And I went to inform her that it was in 1681 that the term white was invented, you know, codified and became a legal status. And to be black or Native American, quote unquote, put you at the bottom of the racial totem pole and the societal totem pole. And she was shocked. I said, yeah, prior to 1681, there were no people, no group of people on the planet referred to as white. And I said, that's the issue with us. We don't realize that slavery is literally the shortest part of our history, 500 years for our existence in this particular part of the world. Yet it has had the most profound effect on how we think, live, and function. When you go back prior to that 500 years, a couple thousand years prior to that, when Africa was still in a different situation as far as the different places, all these different kingdoms where a lot of incredible things were happening simultaneously across the continent, it was completely different. And I had to explain to her that, you know, scientifically, they just proved, and they talked about this a few times this year alone, that white people did not physically exist on this planet until 8,000 BC. Prior to that, there was no such thing as what we would call a white person, a person who had the physical, phenotypical features of a European. Most notably, that melanin-deficient skin. The gene for that particular form of albinism did not kick in the human organism until 8,000 BC. So when you hear them, get that out your mind that Neanderthals were white. Cheek Answer Joke talked about the fact that Neanderthals, a lot of them had rickets. Rickets is something that African people get when they're in a climate that's temperate rather than tropical, and they're not getting enough sunlight. Their body cannot produce enough vitamin D, and they start to suffer from rickets. And a great majority of Neanderthals suffered from rickets. So even the depiction of a Neanderthal is not accurate. There were some white Neanderthals, but Neanderthals were not holistically white.
Hey, I
so
think
it's
you
really
need to
interesting, man.
Post some of that into the to the real life, so the people can
yeah,
see
I'm,
that.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to dig it up because he had talked about that in Civilization and Barbarism. He talked about that. You know, Neanderthals were not white. But the articles are on white people. The gene itself is the SLC2-something gene.
Hey,
and it's the same gene that they found at first in fish.
Hey,
go
we got brother OG, though. Let's see what he got to add to this. How you doing tonight?
Greetings, brother O.
Oh, okay. I guess that was a mistake. Never mind.
Are you there? No, I was I was trying to get on.
Yeah, go ahead. How you doing tonight?
I was saying good evening, comrades.
Greetings.
Well,
greetings.
The way I talk about abolition in my private life is totally different than what happens on New Abolition or any other platform because I don't run that platform. But I make it plain to people that my concern is black people because I'm black. But I also do the numbers. I just put some stuff in there as old data. I didn't want to look around for it, but I'm going to make the same point that I make to people. And I was going to marry a woman that's part Mexican and part white. And I had this conversation often in Tucson when I was doing abolition work there and still calling into Scotty them. We as a black people are about 44 million people. There's about somewhere in the neighborhood of 280 other million people in this country. If you just break it down and separate us from them in 2010 figures, there's six times more people left when you carve us out. Out of 44 million people in prison, there was about 880,000 black people. That's black, Hispanic, and black Africans. My point to you is, I make the point to them that because we are a smaller number of people, it disproportionately affects us. And here's the other part. That's not even factoring in when you go into jails. Actually, when you go into jails, we are impacted even more. It goes down to almost one in four or one in three compared to the rest of the population. So I try not to racialize the fact that slavery legally can get us all, because I understand white supremacy also doesn't care about that bottom tier that ends up with us.
Right.
And that's been that way since 1681 when you talked about it. Poor white folks that were indentured got just as much hassle as we did if they messed with the landowners. The bottom line is, though, we were always the example of what's going to happen to you should you get in prison. So I that's all I wanted to say. I don't even argue with people on whether or not it crosses racial lines, just like cop killings.
Yeah.
Just that more white people die every year from cops than blacks. The point is, you're decimating us and you're taking a smaller percentage of your people. So I always, even when they talk about wealth, you're looking at, don't confuse absolute quantity with percentages. What's happening to us has a far greater impact because we're only 44 million people.
Right.
That's the only point I wanted to make.
All right. Oh, yeah. Brother Scott, I thank you for that, too. Right. Oh, Brother Scott is on? Well, yeah, let's bring him in.
Go ahead, Brother Scott. Thank you for that, too, by the way, OG.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you.
I have myself muted. Going back to touching upon something with Otis now. When we're among ourselves, I talk honestly with my family members or in my friends and whatnot. We know that it's disproportionately affecting us. But in terms of a political strategy, and it, you know, I really didn't get it until I came across Mr. Fuller. In terms of a political strategy, if I'm talking to, for example, I have called and will continue to call my local representative, who is a quote-unquote white man who has a all-white staff. So when I call them to talk about slavery, I know they don't give... let me rephrase that. I know it's likely they don't give a damn that is disproportionately affecting black people. They probably is like, good, I'm glad it's only affecting black people. So to disarm them, I use the term American or U.S. citizen.
Well, I don't find that true, because I actually did it in Tucson in the boys club and stuff like that. When you start explaining to them that equally people are getting killed, but it disproportionately affects us, it's telling them the truth. They start understanding the impact that I'm not just saying it only happens to black people. They realize that it's double the amount of people that they thought I was complaining about. So I see it a little different than you. That's why I was saying to you, I spend time explaining to people the difference in absolute versus percentages, and I let them know, yes, I'm a black man in America, and I'm not going to deny racism, but what I'm telling you is your people are dying too. As a matter of fact, when Kanye spoke up, I was telling people, I actually got more retweets and stuff and my tweets double. But they were white people, and white people actually came forward, especially women who have husbands in jail, and started talking to me about it in my direct messaging, because they get it. And some of them admit, I thought it was just a black problem. And I've had exchanges with them where I say, yeah, but now that you found out it hit direct with you, the information that I've been telling you to go to New Abolitionist Radio and hear, you thought it was just those people. Now you find out that when you're poor, you are those people.
Right.
So they
Yeah, so I don't see, you know, I don't know, maybe I'm not explaining myself properly. I know that there are quote unquote, and I kind of hesitate using this term, but white allies. There are those white people who are progressives. I mean, we got white people that work with us through New Abolitionist Radio, who were a part of the march on Washington, the Millions for Prisoners March. But when I'm talking to a politician, when I'm talking to an office holder or what have you, it's not my intent to prove the disproportionality of how slavery is affecting my people. My strategic intent is to focus on the fact that slavery's wrong and we still practicing slavery and y'all been lying about it, and we need to stop practicing slavery. So I don't know what's in that person's heart or not, or whether or not they would care that black people are being, you know, affected disproportionately. I just take that out the equation and make it simple. Slavery is being practiced and it needs to end.
I think the good part is codification in a public arena like that. That's good codification. Yes. I think great codification.
Excuse me just a second.
Go ahead.
What I want to say is, I think me and Scotty are talking the same thing, except
I think so too. I was going
to
say that.
What I'm saying to you is, when I go, like, especially to white people around here, and I talk to them about it, I just met with some yesterday evening, six white women that I know from high school. And they asked me about, you know, that's all you have is why do you do that? I said, because it's important. I said, but you're missing the point. You also have family members and loved ones and community members that are suffering the same thing. And I just broke down exactly what I just said to you before when I told them. What you're not understanding is you see me as a black person and you think that it's pivotal to me because it's only happened to blacks. And the point is, no, it's not happening to blacks. And I give them the numbers. I even share the chart with them about prisoners and jail versus prison. Stuff that people don't parse to. You say prison to people and they think it's all of it. You say jails, they think it all of it. They think those words are synonyms. They don't even understand they're separate systems, but integrated to move you along. But my point is, once they understand that it's about inhumanity,
right,
that it's wrong to do it to humans, to cage them, right, all of a sudden they remove themselves from the assumption that you're talking about black people. So right. I think it's more a clarification than it is worrying about the label, is what I'm saying.
Hey,
because you have to break people down to be able to get them to understand that, because they make the assumption.
Yes.
When you
yes.
say, as soon as you say slavery, they automatically assume it's black people. And I'm saying, no, I'm telling you, this is happening to mm-hmm. anyone that gets convicted in this country. Uh-huh. It's just that I look at it because I'm black. I'm a black advocate, just like you're AKA or whatever you choose.
Brother
to be.
O, I got both of you. And y'all are parallel on the same points. You're just saying it in a different way. But we're coming up on
I understand what
Okay, hold on. I'm gonna come right there to you, Scott, and then after that we're gonna go to this next stage. But right now I'm gonna just go on and knock out this. You're listening to Real Life the Radio Show. If you have a question or comment, by all means, y'all can join in the conversation. That phone number is 704-802-5056. Press ** to put yourself in the queue and you give us what you got to say. Go ahead, Brother Scotty. And
my question is, and, you know, this is just my observation, not saying I'm right. Y'all might have a different perception about what I'm speaking about. But I think that corporate media, most of the media, focus a lot on black people being killed by cops. And you even though numerically more white people are getting killed by cops, you don't see a lot of those stories. You really don't. You'll see one here, like the white woman who got shot by I think his nationality was Somalian, the Somalian cop in Milwaukee. She was Australian. He shot her in the face when she knocked on the window. Zachary Hammond out of South Carolina, the little young white boy who was trying to get away from a slave catcher who was going to arrest him over some marijuana, and he tried to speed away, and they shot and killed him. Those are the only two stories I can recall, but I can tell you a bunch of stories from the media about Black people getting killed.
There's
we all
reason,
know the names, and we can recite those names. I think that's on purpose.
I was about to say there's a reason for that.
White people think it's only happening to Black people. What are y'all thoughts?
I was gonna say just that. There's a process that I've talked about called psychosocial conditioning, and what it is when you plaster that all over the place regularly, nothing but Black death, and it's always at the hands of an officer. And then, of course, we know the media tends to demonize the victim. So even if the victim was unarmed, somehow they facilitated their own death. So it falls in line with the white supremacy narrative that we've been conditioned to and born into from day one. And it also, like you said, it isolates it to only Black people. Oh, it's only Black people getting killed. So it's only them that's causing all the problems. The cops have to kill them. And there's no white people getting killed because that's not what I see.
Right.
So you're absolutely correct. Like,
Roz,
go ahead.
You
hit it. It's control. I'm going to do it real quick. It's controlling the narrative. When I left
pretty
those
much,
six white women yesterday, that's exactly what I asked them. Why do you think a media that's supposed to be informing you won't tell you that more white people die? Because if they do, you become allies and comrades in a movement to stop it. The media has no interest in stopping it.
Bacon's Rebellion would happen all over again. Because you know white people raise hell. That's the thing with the difference between them and us. Their team wins a hockey game, they burn the city down. You know, something goes wrong in somebody's neighborhood, they'll just start wilding out. That's what white people are known for.
Well, they know they don't risk death for doing it.
And that's exactly why. So and you got a bunch of Duck Dynasty boys all through this country with the guns ready to get busy. So you know when white people raise hell, lives are going to be taken. It's not just like that's what's coming. And then you mix that with a bunch of Black people and they on the same page.
You get 100 Timothy McVeighs overnight.
Yep, and that's Baker's Rebellion, and that's what they're seeking to stop it. But now they're using the media because the media is the most powerful thing. You are absolutely correct. They control the narrative, and I know that foreigners, they get all the images they get. I know in Trinidad we used to see BT and the news from here, and all they would show is Black people in trouble, and all the rap music was nigga everywhere. So we're getting that understanding that, oh, this is how these people live, because that's what we think. That's all we see on television. And then we come to the state, you know, for the first time, and in some instances, they actually take people and cordon them off and show them videos and tell them, don't mess with Black Americans. Stay away from them. They're dangerous.
Right.
That has happened. Huh?
Have you looked at the chat?
No, I missed it. Go ahead.
Okay,
yeah.
Both of y'all were saying the exact same thing. And that codification, you know, these particular women that you're speaking to, you got to understand, OG, that these are people that you know. You can't just approach people and talk to them like that, because they get on the defensive and then they don't receive anything that you're saying. And that's what Brother Scotty was saying. When you're letting people know about this who you have not been in contact with, you can't. That puts people in a defensive mechanism, and that's the reason I was saying with a friend of mine to be able to don't use racism, just use the misconduct and the abuse that they're doing to you as the vehicle to get whatever you need to be done, because you will never be able to prove that to them. You got a lot of background.
Right. You okay?
But you will not be able to prove that to them once you mention racism, or like you were saying, if we trying to get them to understand what's going on with the slavery, Brother Scotty brought it up. All they see is us. It have to be us. We always doing something wrong. They'll never believe what you're saying.
Exactly.
Because most people do not read. They don't research anything.
Mr. Jenner.
Yes, sir.
Guess what? In that conversation yesterday, you know what? Two of those ladies walked away. I actually was in high school with them in an American culture class. It's one of the reasons they invited me. I was the only man there. And one of the things they said to me after an hour and a half of chatting with them is, every argument I thought that I had against you, you just explained to me why I had it wrong, even though I had the facts.
Because they don't
Most
know.
People, if you break down the whole thing, like I said, mm-hmm. when they thought it was only black, and I told them, no, you actually got double the numbers and actually more. They were saying it's not happening to white people. Once they find out the facts, you can change somebody's mind. I've done it with strangers right there in Tucson, but I have a little bit different approach to it because I say, let's put all the facts on the table. Tell me what you think. Tell me what right. your myths are.
No,
because you find out their myths are grounded not in fact, and then when they get the facts, they will change. They will change.
Well, some of them. Some
because
of them
they understand
will.
It's not just color. Oh, no, not all of them, yeah. but I'm saying to you, the ones that are willing to receive you and have an honest dialogue, you're going to have some Richard Spencers that are never going to change.
It goes
But the
bad.
People that are possible allies, if they're sincere in what they're doing, most of them even do it based on their religion and a moral point of view.
Well, it goes back to what I was stating earlier, that we assume that they know and put ourselves at a weak point. Because a lot of them do not know. But Brother Roz, you had that next cognitive dissonance. Another yes. thing that it goes to is reading comprehension. Because like you stated, Brother O, they can have it right in front of them and not understand anything. Pay attention to your children in school, by the way.
Which it's one the third was it, video, Roz? Minute 2 to 17.
All right, we're going right on into this.
Hey.
Okay.
Savannah, not the modern environment. That means that our intuitions, our gut reactions, our emotions, that's what they're about. They're savannah reactions. And in many cases, in the modern environment, they don't serve us well. So for example, when your boss gives you constructive critical feedback, your intuition is to have either a defensive response or an aggressive response. To kind of shout back, no, you know, I'm awesome, you know, why are you criticizing me? Or to shut down and ignore your boss's criticism. That's the two kind of intuitive responses. Neither of them will help your career. You know, you're better off just learning and incorporating the boss's feedback into your performance. That's one example. Another example is eating sweets. Now, I have an Achilles heel for cheesecake. You know, I love cheesecake. You know, that's a problem for me. And that's a problem for all of us to have as much sugar and sweets as possible because it was beneficial for our survival in the savannah. Not so good now. That's another example. And the whole framework for what's going on here is that we all have a series of thinking errors called cognitive biases. That's what the scholars call them. More than 100 of them altogether. You can look them up on Wikipedia or in my book, The Truth Seeker's Handbook, A Science-Based Guide. So these are thinking errors that we typically have. And they all come back from two types of thinking that we have, two thinking systems. One is called the autopilot system. That's our intuitive habitual system, also called system one. It's the gut reactions. It's the habits. That's the savannah environment. It's our emotions and intuitions. Feels very comfortable, very convenient, but often wrong. The second system of thinking we have is much slower, much harder to implement. That's our intentional system. That's the one that deals with abstract reasoning. That's the one where you try to restrain yourself from eating that second piece of cheesecake and you try to get yourself out of your chair and go out and do some exercises, or you try to restrain yourself from shouting back at your boss. That's the intentional system, much harder to use, much more effortful. So that's kind of the basic framework of why we have these thinking errors that we do and why we make these mistakes, including in racialized settings.
Excellent. Thank you for that. I'm still feeling the cheesecake. I have to have it. And I'm the boss, so I yell at myself. So probably I'm failing at that too. So we'll get some more work done on that. Now, so you write in the book about mental patterns are determined by our genes. The other half is determined by our environment and experience. So when you're talking about the savannah, you're talking about our ancient African history or what have you in terms of how the environment shaped our value systems axiologically, psychologically, and so on and so forth. So just as we are born today, how we were raised, where we were raised, the environment, the socialization, that affects our behavior and mental patterns?
Absolutely. So in this, one of the biggest things impacting racial issues is tribalism. In the savannah, you needed to be with your tribe to survive. Basically, if you weren't bonded with your tribe, if you weren't helping them out, if you weren't looking out for them, you wouldn't survive. We are all the children. We are all the descendants of people who had a very strong tribal instinct. The people who didn't have a strong tribal instinct just didn't survive. That's the Darwinian mechanism of evolution, right? Mm-hmm. So they didn't survive. So we all have tribal instincts. Now, if you look at children, little babies, they have more positive reactions to other babies who look like them rather than babies who don't. And that's kind of a very basic thing. You can see how it's evolved in the genes. There's no experience that they have that would cause them to have these negative reactions. So that's, so if you look at their, whether they smile on their faces or not when they're exposed to babies of other skin color. And that's one example of whether it's genetic. Of course, the other aspect of it is mimetic. Memes refers to not internet memes, but—
Right, I know, memetics, yeah. Yes, yeah. Richard ideas, Dawkins, yeah. 1976.
Exactly. Yeah. You know it. I'm talking to your audience who may not know it. So it's a study of how ideas influence us. And so it's our experience, which you mentioned before, the kind of environment we have, the kind of growth patterns that we experienced because of our parents and so on. And that's the part we can control. So maybe about 50% of it is DNA that we can't control. 50% of it is something we can control. So we can control our tribalism, but it's not intuitive at all. It's very intuitive for us to be tribal. It's very intuitive for us to have negative reactions, to have implicit bias toward people with different skin color than we are. And this applies to both Black people, white people, Asian people, and so on. Asians would like other Asians more than white people or Black people. Black people would like other Black people more than Black people and white people. White people would like other white people. Same thing refers to males and females and so on. Whatever you consider part of your tribal background, you would tend to like those people more. It's very natural, it's very intuitive. So many people, when they talk about this, they use a framework of you should be ashamed of feeling of those feelings, you should be feel guilty. And that's not really helpful at all, because these are natural feelings. I mean, should you feel guilty about wanting a second piece of cheesecake? No, it's just kind of a natural intuitive desire. You can't control, in that sense, your intuitions. What you can control is your behaviors. And so in the same way that it's natural to want a second piece of cheesecake, but it's civilized to choose to not have it. It's natural to like other people who have your color of skin, but it's civilized to treat everyone equally based on their merit and how they deserve.
Okay, so that's really good. You talk about it's better to hold myself 100% responsible for my actions, but 0% responsible for my feelings.
Yes, so that's—
I love that.
That's the essence of that point, that in the moment, you can't change your feelings. You can change your feelings over the long term with a lot of efforts, and my book talks about how to do that. But in the moment, you can't change what you feel. You can only control your behaviors. That's something you can control. So you can't change how you feel about other people. You can change how you behave toward them, making sure that you treat them equally. And you treat everyone based on their merit, based on their character, not based on their tribal identity.
Okay. All right. So let's get into some of the biases that was so intriguing. I had a gentleman by the name of Professor James Duane on my show. He was a district attorney and wrote an amazing book on the Fifth Amendment. And he was talking about the confirmation bias that law enforcement has. Mm-hmm. And I said, do you know Gleb Sapirsky? And so I know this stuff has been around for a long time, but you know, you're the kind of unequivocal guy. So I said, wow, that was really intuitive that he knows about confirmation bias within the policing system. Talk to us about and explain confirmation bias, but explain it from a racialized perspective. Sure. And how that works.
So the confirmation bias is our tendency to look for information that conforms to our beliefs and also interpret information that conforms to our beliefs. For example, we know from a lot of polling data that Black people are stopped on highways for various issues at a much higher rate than white people. That means that police officers tend to look for black drivers intuitively without intending to. That's just their confirmation. They have an intuitive belief that black people will tend to break laws more often than white people. And therefore, they look for cars with black drivers and stop those cars more often. So that's kind of one situation, looking for the situation. The other aspect is interpreting the situation in ways that conform to our beliefs. So once you stop a car, how do you treat the passenger in the car? We know that black people have violence used against them in police settings at about twice to three times the rate of white people for the same sort of infraction. Mm-hmm. So that's already, you are not looking for the information, you're interpreting the information. Mm-hmm. So if you see a black person, if a white police officer sees a black person take out something that's vaguely object-shaped, the white police officer is going to be much more likely to believe that the black person is pulling out a gun rather than his wallet to show his ID card. So that's an example of where the white police officer would have a negative interpretation of the black person's actions. So again, looking for information and interpreting information in ways that conforms to your beliefs of traffic.
Thank you for that. And also, we've seen too, it doesn't really matter if the cop is white because of the socialization inherent in law enforcement.
No, I think that was the perfect place to stop it because we're coming up real short on time. But to end it right there, okay, with him saying not just white police, man, do we not know that's the truth? But go ahead and let us know why you wanted to get into that particular video.
Now, I wanted to get into this because I think these are some of the ways, what he just explained is the way the average white person that you come across who practices racism, that's what it is with them. They'll find a reason to call the police. They make up a reason to call the police. Confirmation of their bias. So that's how the conditioning from 1681 till today manifests in this autopilot kind of behavior that we see from the average local, average citizen you'll bump into. And then you see it in magnanimous light with Donald Trump. One thing I wanted to say is that this preference for skin color that he's discussing, I don't think that became a reality until racism became a reality. Because even when you study the histories of the history of the Moors in Europe, one thing that you'll find consistently is that they ruled Spain and for almost 800 years. It was like 786 years, I believe. And in that time, you had Muslims, Jews, and Christians worshiping in their places of worship with no terrorist acts committed. Everyone was treated equitably and with respect. The first universities on the European continent were brought there by the Moors, and everyone used them. There was no separation of society where one group did one thing or one group got better services than others. So to me, that bias has come into line with the global expansion of the kind of white. That's just what I see just studying history versus how we dealt with each other in the past. Even when you study Roman history, Romans had all colors and slaves could rise to become nobles. You had some African kings of Rome. Caracalla is one of them, but there were a few of them. So it was just a different way. And it doesn't mean that those biases didn't come into play at times, but there was no wholesale global concept of this kind of mistreatment of one group versus another like that. So what he was discussing was cognitive bias in the way that it manifests in police officers, which I think was a good thing. And I like the way that Philippe Matthews brought up the socialization. So you have black people that are socialized, criminalized other black people, that some of these people who become officers. You have Asians that are socialized to criminalize black people when they become officers. And in some Asian communities, they're socialized that way before they become officers. You have so-called Latino officers, same thing. So it then again implies the same way you can confer, or white people confer whiteness on the groups that they deem, you know, the ability to do so, and those people start to fall in line by mistreating Black people and other non-white people, you can do the same thing using the badge, which we've all talked about and seen before. So this is the main thing is that I wanted to really discuss how this infection started, 1681, and the different ways that we see it manifest in our daily reality, so that we get a handle on our own mental health. That's why I say that prayer at the end of every show, because that is really what I do. I've come across some real, you know, just off-put Black folks, and I treat them with utmost respect, and I give them their space. And then I've come into contact with other Black folks, and we just have a great conversation. And then I usually end up telling them about Black Talk Radio Network and the show, and they end up taking my information. So it's really, it all depends. But regardless of what my experience is with them, I give them respect. And that's, and these are some of the reasons. He gets into some other forms of mental issues down the road, which is why I wanted to play to other stuff. We won't be able to get into it tonight. But it ties into what Scotty and Brother OG were talking about in regards to when you having a discussion, there's a psychology behind when you use racism, a white person's going to shut you down. And he goes into the mental health science of that. And that's something else I wanted to get into, because the same thing can be applied to some of our people when it comes to certain conversations that we have amongst each other and our inability to disagree without being anti-Black in our disagreements with each other. Did you have anything you wanted to add to that, Jenna?
Yeah, I can always add to that. But let's hear what OG got to say first real quick. What's
going
on?
Oh, yeah, bring him in, for sure.
Yeah. I was just going to throw in, I listened to that Sunday, this whole program Sunday, and I'm surprised that you brought it in. I'm glad you did. But the only question I had in that whole presentation with this guy is, I became a father late, and I read a lot of books on babies. And one of the things they use to show that the socialization actually makes people biased and prejudiced and bigoted, because when you put babies that are like similar age and development, they don't discriminate based on color, which is what he implied in his presentation.
I made a comment to
Felipe about that, and he never addressed it. Because, what's his name, Dr. Brazel or whatever his name, he used to be the hug doctor and all that stuff or something.
Mm-hmm.
Oprah had him on a lot. I've read a lot of his work and several other people. I can't even cite the books, but the point I wanted to make is they actually use babies to prove that what he said about the wrong, different color is wrong. And I'm going to tell you why what he did. He said that they spot differently or what. Guess what? Usually what they do is show a facial expression of inquisitiveness, wanting to know, the curiosity and seeing something that's different. They don't see that different as you don't belong to me. They see it for just what it is, an optical difference. And they tend to touch, feel, and do each other and can't even speak. But they don't reject each other. And his presentation, he was saying it as though they use it as a mechanism for
the
rejection.
The opposite is true.
And exactly, because the opposite is true. You actually have to be taught and socialized to not do and be inquisitive.
Well, right. Thank you, and I'm glad OG. You brought that up, because that's a form of tribalism.
Not Russ.
And babies don't. Huh?
Okay.
Oh, go ahead, my bad.
Thank you for that, Brother OG. We are getting down here. We are at the bottom of the hour. Things that I got from that, I'm glad OG had brought up that point. Well, things like that, I feel that he may have been practicing racism right there for that particular point. Now, it's a lot of great information that was out. And you can find that video in real life. Roz put it in the thread, or you could go and check out Philippe Matthews. I believe that's what his name is. He always have some fantastic guests on there that give out a lot of great information. But that was one of those points, and that's what I was going to bring up, is that the fact that he say all of these things, but then he pretends as if it's a biological thing. Again, it goes back to excuse me, I'm having a brain fart. it goes back to reading comprehension. And just the fact that a lot of us don't read at all. We do no research. And that's why when you see all of the black faces being murdered by these slave catchers, you only think of black people. Because the only research they do, more times than not, and it's not just white people, it's black people also. But most of our research consists of turning to the news, the propaganda. And man... Mm-hmm. The propaganda that we show here is to try to give a balance to that, to where if you didn't know about these things, that you could go and check that out. Kind of like Queen of Jamaica, that I'm going to get a little deeper into, because until Raj posted that, I had never heard of her. So these are always wonderful things that we could show our children other than slavery. But we always have to make sure that slavery is the first thing on our mind. Because any of us can become a slave at any given point. And we know just from the recent videos this week with the children being missing, the cop laying on the young lady and punching her in her side, you know, the police that they was trying to cheer on because he told them two young black boys that I could have killed you. You know, we have so much negativity. And a lot of times we tell our children about this, but we tell it to them in a discouraging way. And I know a lot of y'all may be like, how can you tell it in any other? Well, we tell them with the inclination that it's going to be emotional, when we as black people are not allowed to have emotions. So you have to tell them in a logical way so that they will be prepared when these type of instances happen. But with that being said, Roz, go ahead and give us your last, and we'll get ready to close the show out, man. Oh, before you go, Roz, go ahead real Scotty, quick, right? Brother Scotty.
Yeah, just one quick thing that I picked up from listening to him, and he was talking about emotionality. And you're right, you can't control your feelings, but you can control your behavior. And absolutely, this is what we talk about in being codified, is don't be emotional in your responses, to be logical in your behavior. That's all.
Ah, no worries.
Great
Thank
addition.
You.
Thanks for that. Excuse me. Thank you for that, Scotty. And thanks for OG, too, because the input was phenomenal. And you're absolutely correct. Emotions is what puts us in a state of being out of control of ourselves. One thing I learned in my spiritual practice, because meditation is like an extremely important part of that for me, is that emotions are states of trance. And that's why they're hard to break out of once they start. But if you catch them early enough, it's easier to control them. Once you let them take hold, then you're out of control of yourself until that emotion has run its course, whatever the emotion is. And that is one of the most important things that we can teach our children, is the ability to really tame the emotions. That's one of the main reasons for the Sphinx, the lion's head, man's head on the lion's body, is basically the intellect controlling the animal nature. That is a living hieroglyph in and of itself. And that's one of the meanings of the Sphinx, is the human intellect controlling the animal self, that untamable solar power that we have. That expresses itself in a myriad of emotions. Now, I wanted to address the same thing that our brother Otis touched on in regards to the babies, and him saying that babies practice racism. he's implying that a form of skin tribalism exists in humans from the time they're born, and no human child knows what a tribe is. They have to be indoctrinated and brought into the tribe and taught the rites and rituals of that tribe to become an accepted member of that tribal group. So that is completely incorrect. And absolutely everything Brother OG said is correct as well. And I'm glad he brought that up, because I definitely wanted to address that. That is like non-factual.
Practicing racism.
He's practicing. I was going to say he sounded like Gus the way you said it. And I was like, completely accurate. I think the same thing. And that's how subtle racism is, that even in a conversation that has constructive value, you might find that plug somewhere in to somewhere in the duration of the conversation, bang, it'll rear its head somewhere, and I'm glad you caught it. So yeah, with that, did you have anything you wanted to add before we close out?
Yeah, one thing, I know they got this big hoopla about this lottery. If you hit I hope we split it, because I played too. So, hey, with that being said, good night. We appreciate y'all checking us out tonight, and if not, on the playback. We're here every Tuesday, 9 p.m. Absolutely. Eastern Standard Time. See you next week. Peace.
All right. You're going to get into the prayer, I guess, and close out?
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, let's roll it out then. Creator, we ask that you help us to remain patient with other Black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us to remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of Black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time that, that we are in contact with another Black person. It has been time to replace white supremacy with justice immediately and stop slavery and human trafficking immediately. Let's amend and repeal? I think the first is, if Scotty can correct me. Repeal and amend, that's what it is. Repeal and amend the 13th Amendment, that's what it is. I think, if I'm incorrect, please let me know. And let's move on to final prayer of the evening. I am in the love of the all, and all love is in me. I am a part of the all, and the all is a part of me. I am one with the all, and the all is one with me. I can succeed as a part of the all and fail as an individual. I can be all that I wish in the all, as long as my wish is to stay in the all. I am never alone. The all is, I am. The all can, I can. The all does, I do. Thanks again for spending your Tuesday evening into the night with us. We wish you the best. We'll see you again next week. Creator willing, one love.
Peace.
Peace.
Execution.